Paul, as he writes this letter to the Romans, gives to his original readers what is the fullest exposition of the Christian gospel that is found in the New Testament. Now, to many people today, it has nothing to say to them. It is a first century letter, a letter that is of no current relevance for us today. We have moved on. We are today more sophisticated. And one of the reasons for this is the general European attitude toward life. It is a hedonistic attitude toward life. Its basic premise is that we live here in this world to enjoy ourselves. In the words of Paul elsewhere, "Let us eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we die." Entertainment, material prosperity, these are the things that life is really all about. Questions about God, questions about personal salvation, questions about our future destiny, these are not high up, not high up the list of priorities for modern men and women and young folks. And coupled with this, there is today an abysmal ignorance of what the message of the Bible is all about, what the gospel is all about, the good news of salvation, how a person can be, indeed needs to be, right with God. The spiritual dimension of life, a relationship with God, these are sidelined in the agenda of modern men and women and young folks. These things are dismissed. We can face the future when we meet it. But the terrifying consequences of all of this, not taking God seriously, is everywhere evident today in our society. Broken lives, and broken families, and broken relationships, and a broken down society in so many places. Personal problems, a sense that life has no purpose, that there is no underlying foundations to all that we have here in this world. We think of the words of the psalmist in Psalm number 11 and verse 3. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? But what we need to realize is that this is not just a modern phenomena. It has been here in this world from almost its very beginning. This is not just a modern problem. It was most certainly there in the days when Paul wrote this letter to the church at Rome. The first century, with all its different cults and different religions, its different temples, its different philosophies. And Paul writes this letter from which we have read this morning to the Christians that are in Rome. And he writes to them to explain to them the message of the gospel that he is preaching. Preaching in the great cities of the ancient world, like Athens and Corinth and Ephesus. And now he wants to visit them in Rome also. And he tells us in chapter 15 that he wants to visit them as he makes a journey to Spain. There are Christians in Rome. But before he comes to visit them, he wants to explain to them the gospel that he is preaching, the message of the gospel. It is this message that has broken into the ancient world, a world with so many different and competing philosophies and religions, so much like our society today, this world in which we live. But Paul tells us at the very beginning here, in verse number 16, that he is not ashamed of this message that he is preaching throughout the ancient world. He is not ashamed of the good news of the gospel. In verse 1 of this chapter, Paul calls it this gospel. He says, it is the gospel of God. He tells us in verse number 3, he talks about this gospel, and it concerns God's Son, Jesus Christ. And he is not ashamed of this gospel. And the reason he is not ashamed to preach this message is that this message comes from the highest source possible. This is a message that comes to us from God himself. It originates, this message, it originates in the very heart of God. God's love and compassion toward us. And not only so, but this message focuses not on some abstract idea. This message focuses upon a person called Jesus Christ. It is a message that focuses upon who he was, who he is, and what he accomplished by his coming into this world to be where we were. His life and his death and his resurrection. It is a message that comes to us from God. A message that comes to us today from God. And it's a message that focuses upon this person called Jesus Christ. And so surely, there can be no greater. There can be no more significant message than this message. It's good news for us today. It's good news about salvation. In verse 16, Paul begins with the little word for. And that connects with the verse that has gone before, verse number 15. And that verse focuses upon Paul's eagerness. His eagerness, the eagerness on his part to preach this message at the very heart of the Roman Empire itself, Rome. There's a willingness to come to Rome and to preach this same message at the very heart of the empire. But surely you might say to us today, surely you might say to Paul, as a modern multiculturalist might say to Paul, but your message is only one message among many. There are so many different religions in the world, different philosophies. And they all have their own unique and peculiar way of salvation. What makes your message so special? Why is this message unique? Why should we particularly listen to this message? That's what people might say today in our contemporary world. Why should we listen to your message? Well, Paul tells us what makes the gospel he proclaims so special. Because, he says, it is the power of God unto salvation. People might say to us today, all these different philosophies, all these different religions with their different ways of salvation. And they might say to us today, but truth has so many different faces. Why should we accept your version of the truth? Why should we believe what you're saying to us? Paul says, what makes this message so different and so unique is that this message, says Paul, is the power of God unto salvation. And this brings us, it brings us right to the heart of what the gospel message is all about. It's a message that proclaims God's saving power. God's saving power. And that, you see, is why Paul is not ashamed to preach this message. Because, you see, it has within it the ability to change people's lives. This message has transformative power. And that, you see, is why it is different from all other philosophies and different religions. It has within it this message itself. It has transformative power. This message has within it the very power of God to change you. Not just for a short period of time, but to change you and make you different, make you a new person, traveling in a different direction to a different destination. And that is why this gospel that Paul preached is so unique, so radically different. It's a message about salvation. But you might say today, but do we really need to hear such a message? Do we really need salvation? Do we really need to be right with God? But you might ask the very pertinent question, do we really need to hear this message? Why did Paul have such eagerness to spread this message in the ancient world? Why did he have such eagerness to go to Rome with this message? We need this message because it is the power of God for salvation. And we might ask ourselves, in the light of the kind of society we live in, we're relatively comfortably off. We live in a relatively safe society. Well, the necessity of the gospel is expounded by Paul in the remainder of this chapter, and indeed over into chapter 2 and the first part of chapter 3. And the reason why we need to hear this message, the reason why we need the gospel, is answered for us by Paul in verse number 18. For the wrath of God, he says, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. The necessity for the gospel is divine wrath against human sin. And this is something, of course, that men and women and young folks don't want to hear. And this is a dimension of human conduct that is overlooked in our present day culture. If we have problems, and there are many people with problems today, perhaps we need a social worker, perhaps we need a mental health visitor, perhaps we need a mental health nurse, perhaps we need a marriage guidance counsellor, perhaps we need a financial advisor. Now perhaps we may at times need these people and their expertise, but the deepest problem of all lies in our relationship with our Creator, the one who made us. And it's interesting in verse number 18 that the first thing that Paul talks about here is not our sin but ungodliness. It's our relationship to our Creator that is fundamental at the heart of our need. And Paul, in the second half of this chapter, Romans chapter 1, he diagnoses the problem. And the diagnosis is not good. It has awful consequences. And they all have to do deep down with our relationship with God. And godliness is at the heart of our difficulties and problems. So what are some of these problems? First of all, Paul identifies repression of the truth. Truth about God. Now the little word repression is a word that means to keep under, it means to put down, it means to suppress. And here in verse number 19 we read, that which may be known of God, he says, is manifest in them. It's plain, says Paul, that there is a God. We just need to look at the world. Where did it come from? Why does it exist? And then we read in verse number 28, that these pagans, they did not like to retain knowledge of God. They did not like to retain knowledge of God. In other words, they suppressed, willfully suppressed, knowledge about God. Is that not true in a contemporary society? We think of the present day atheists. We think of their suppression of any knowledge of God. We think of their campaign to eradicate any knowledge of God from our society, from our schools, from our educational establishments. A suppression of any knowledge of God. We don't want to know about God. We don't want to acknowledge that there is a God. Secondly, there is a deliberate self-blinding. Look at verse 21. That when people know that there is a God, they don't want to glorify him as God. Thirdly, he says, there is on the part of human beings living without God, there is a foolish pride. There is a self-sufficiency. Says verse 22, they regard themselves as being wise. But, says Paul here, they became fools. They became the very opposite of what they're claiming to be. Claiming to be wise, he says, really, really they are fools. And is that not an accurate commentary upon so much of what we see around us? These are anxious and troubling times. Times of uncertainty, of insecurity. Our world seems to be have no purpose. There seems to be no purpose in society. Where are we travelling to? People are anxious. What about the future? What about the results of all these elections taking place in Europe? What does the future hold? What does the future hold? Fourthly, Paul says here, there is in the part of these pagans corruption, selfish passions, he says. Verse 29, he says, they are filled, these people, with unrighteousness, with fornication, doing things that are against nature. And fifthly and finally, he says in verse 25, these pagans, they are worshipping false gods, worshipping and serving the creature rather than the creator. Do we not live today in a human-based society? The worship of self, the promotion of self. We live in a culture of celebrity, worshipping the creature more than the creator, who is blessed forever. Paul, in verse number 23, speaks about the worshipping animals and reptiles. And although idolatry today is perhaps more sophisticated than the ancient world, it is still there. Now, although Paul here gives us a very graphic description of first century paganism, it is a true expression of the human condition in whatever age, in whatever country. People today don't want to know. They don't want to know about God. But, says Paul, over against this, but I'm not ashamed, he says. Confronted with all this opposition to a true belief in God, he says here, but I'm not ashamed. And today, we should not be ashamed. We should not be ashamed of the gospel that we preach. We should not be ashamed of the message that we seek to communicate to men and women and young folks. We should not be ashamed. We should stand on this gospel and not be ashamed of it, for the simple reason, it is the only message in the world today that can change people's lives. We're in the midst, of course, of a political campaign, another election. These politicians, they make so many promises to change society, but what they cannot change is the individual. They may promise so much, but they cannot change the individual, because the political message has not within it the very power that is the power of God to change, to transform human lives. And why should we not be ashamed of this message? It is because even today, after 2,000 years, it is still the power of God for salvation. It still has within it, this very message has within it, the power to transform the broken and lost lives of men and women and young folks. And this message is not just any message. These are days of texting and of messaging. But this message has within it the power to break into your life and to change it, and to change it forever. This message is still today the power of God unto salvation. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18, the preaching of the cross, he says, is to those who are perishing, foolishness, but to those who are being saved, it is the very power of God. He speaks In 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 24, he speaks about this person, Jesus Christ, as being the power of God and the wisdom of God. And he says in chapter 2 that your faith should not stand in human wisdom, but in the power of God. The idea of salvation, we thought about it earlier, of being rescued, is central to the gospel. It is central to Paul's thoughts here. It carries with it, of course, the idea of salvation. It carries with it that future dimension, the certainty that the Christian has of a future in heaven. For the Christian, we were saved, past tense, when we accepted Jesus Christ as our personal Saviour. Not through a process of believing, but rather simultaneous with believing, accepted with God. We are being saved in the present tense, carried through all the ups and downs and trials and difficulties of life, this present life, and we shall be saved when finally we go to be with Christ in heaven. But this is not a universal reality. And Paul makes that clear here. It's only to those who have faith. It is only to those who believe. And what is faith? How do we define it? Well, faith is trustful acceptance of Jesus Christ to be our Saviour. It is the trustful acceptance of Jesus Christ and nothing else to be our Saviour. It's not believing in him and doing something else. It's not believing in Jesus Christ and trying to live a good life. It's not believing in Jesus Christ and joining a particular church. It's belief in Jesus Christ alone that brings us this transformed life. The response that is called for in the gospel is not human merit. It is faith. It is trusting in Jesus Christ. And this is the only way for the Jew, yes, says Paul, but also for the Greek, for the Gentile. And these two groups in the ancient world are brought together. There is only one gospel for both of them. What are the mechanics of all of this? Well, Paul tells his readers in verse number 17. For in it, he says, in the gospel, God's righteousness has been revealed. The word righteousness is key to the message of the gospel. The word righteousness is used by Paul some seven times in this letter. He writes in chapter 3 in verse 21, But now, irrespective of what the law says, the righteousness of God has been disclosed to us. It has been revealed to us. That is the coming of Jesus Christ and what he achieved upon the cross is now attested by the gospel. But what is this righteousness? It is God's righteousness. It is more than just an attribute of God. It is God's righteousness. It has its origin in God. And because it has its origin in God, it is effective in our acceptance before him. It is a righteousness that will vindicate us on a future day. And it's a righteousness that God gives to us because of Jesus Christ. This is the 500th anniversary of the year when Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door of the church in Wittenberg, when he realized what the message of the gospel was really all about. It was not about trying to do his best. He wrestled with this great idea of the righteousness of God till it came to him. Came to him by the help of the Spirit of God, that this is a righteousness that God provides for us and vindicates us before him. It's to everyone, says Paul, to everyone that believes. And here Paul vindicates this argument from the Old Testament. He quotes from the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2 and verse 4. The person who is put right with God, who is righteous, regarded as righteous, will live by faith. And so we see this marked contrast between the different messages out there in the world, the different philosophies and cults and religions, and the message of the gospel. The provision of a righteous standing before God, a transformed life. But the important lesson to take from these two verses is the power embodied in hearing in the message of the gospel to change our lives, to give us a new direction, to give us a new destination to heaven itself. But how is that possible for us? Well, it is through faith. It is through a trustful acceptance of Jesus Christ to be our Saviour. What does the hymn writer say? The hymn writer clarifies all of this when he writes the words, "Nothing in my hand I bring. Simply to thy cross I cling. Naked come to thee for dress. Helpless look to thee for grace. Foul I to the fountain fly. Wash me, Saviour, or I die," writes another hymn writer. "Of a refuge have I none. Hangs my helpless soul on thee. Leave me not alone. Still support and comfort me. All my trust on thee is stayed. All my help from thee I bring. Cover my defenceless head with the shadow of thy wing." That is the gospel. And it is still the power of God for salvation.